Underground Espionage, episode 12. Tara, how is it going?
Hello, Mike. It's much better.
Yes.
I am still charmingly raspy, but overall, I feel like
pretty through it.
I mean, less sick.
You know, knock on.
Less crazy.
Yeah.
Than I was. Less feverish. Fewer coughs. Doing great.
Yeah, I think you had the roughest day and got through it.
Oh man, it was rough. So anyway,
I feel like you're on the other side. I mean,
no, I'm very excited.
Yeah, definitely. Knock on wood. Knock on everything.
Yes.
Since you got through it, what do you and I like to do when it's like, it looks like everything's good? Let's have a home party.
let's annoy the neighbors.
I think
we were pretty good. Like, we went to bed at a reasonable hour.
Yeah.
I think. Like, we were in bed before 2, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, thank you for being with us here at Underground Espionage today. It's great. And if you are new to us, sometimes our at-home parties will reach into the wee hours where we like to DJ to each other and play our favorite hits and maybe scream along with tracks or just play crazy sound. I think we listened to 666 Volbeat last night.
Last night we listened to a lot of noise. We did listen to 666, the Spite tape, as well as all the new Hospital stuff, which is fantastic. Yeah. We listened to that new Cold Ship Passage like twice.
Mm-hmm.
Really
incredible. That's right.
James Light project.
It's all coming back to me now.
Becoming my favorite.
I invented a new cocktail, and that is kombucha mixed with rosé wine.
Yeah.
That was a weird cocktail, but
I kept with Guinness, and I gotta say, man, if you've been following us, you know this Guinness
your new revelation.
Boy,
it's a new chapter of your life. Yeah,
I'm so sold on it.
Yeah,
it's the way to go.
Yeah,
and it makes sense that it's like the working man's drink in Ireland.
You can have a lot of Guinness and not be filled with regret in the same way that you would be, say, if you had many cocktails, many like 8%, 10% IPAs. Like the Guinness, like for some reason, it just like
it is light.
You can bounce back.
It's low alcohol.
and it's not so bubbly. You can really bounce back from a Guinness pretty quickly.
I plan on having some tonight.
Well, I have, kombucha and rosé.
But yeah, we did listen to a lot of noise last night, which was really fun. I just had a good, like I said, the new Hospital. So the new Painless City is incredible. The new Amson Glott really blew us away.
That was so
great
good
theme,
too.
Great title.
Yeah.
Everything. The Igor Linecraft. So, really, really great updates. We listened to that.
We did do the damn thing. I mean, we listened to all of that last night.
And then we finished it off with some Jesus Lizard because we're going to see them tonight.
Yes, that's true.
Which is cool because it walking distance.
Oh, what a dream.
Fantastic. I mean, I know you were sort of on the fence whether or not you're going to be okay.
I don't want to jinx myself. Like,
we'll just see. We'll see.
I just got to the point where I feel human again.
Yeah.
Like,
you're probably going, but you'll just see.
I'm at this point, I'm kind of 50-50.
Yeah.
I'm 50-50. I don't want to push my luck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm going. Gray's going. So you might be going.
It's possible.
We'll see. So we are, it's a good zone here, and we wanted to follow up last week's episode of Bloody Moon, Jess Franco's Bloody Moon, with some more Jess Franco-esque Jess Franco movies, especially the 80s era, the golden films era, which is really kind of our bread and butter when it comes to Jess Franco. So we had picked House of Lost Women to do, and that's the one we actually took notes on and stuff, but then you had suggested, let's watch another one around the same era. You did,
yes.
Hey, get over here. You're like a dog, like looking around, like moving around.
I was looking for the other.
You're like Blu-ray, get over here.
I was like,
you're like a puppy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was trying to remember the other movie, my guy. It's okay. I can wander around with my eyes.
And it's actually the movie that came out right after House of Lost Women, that being The Inconfessable Orgies of Emmanuel.
Oh, that's right. And I remember why we wanted to watch it, too. I was trying to think about it. And it's because we were in such miserable moods. Like,
after
being sick and then finally getting it over it, like, you know, just finishing some, wrapping up some projects and things we had been doing. We're all happy. And then all of a sudden, fucking have to take the car in to get the transmission done. The mechanic was jerking us around, being just insane, unhinged, wild mechanic, who was like, you know, texting Mike things like, got some bad news for
you,
bud.
It's been like a, it's been insane. A mental roller coaster where there was like a 2-hour section of yesterday where I was basically like, oh, I guess we're buying a new car today. Like, I guess that's what we're doing.
And just me being like, can I call them and scream at them? Please, can I call them? But so
I did not let Tara cuck me.
It's true. But look, I won't scream. I don't yell, but I just make my point, my displeasure known in a very professional and composed manner, which is somehow worse. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to really lay it in. But I didn't have to because it worked out. But in the midst, in the throes of this
angst. The day before
angst,
when we were, he was still very shady and felt very weird.
When he was saying we needed a new transmission and it would be $10,000, this sort of thing. Miserable moods.
Yes.
Rotten moods. So we needed something to take us out of our funk.
And I'll say that Inconfessable Orgies of Emmanuel immediately put us in a really good
And it was
kind of
like, this is like the thing. You know when you're like a dark cloud over your head, kind of grim mood. You need a weirdly slow-paced, constantly sexual, jaw-dropping Jess Franco film.
Absolutely. So these are the two movies we'll be discussing today. And you know, we just wanted to do our bread and butter of Jess Franco being this Golden Films era, Cries of Pleasure, Night of Open Sex. Love this stuff so much. Mm. And these are two fantastic ones. And pretty cool. I don't know if it'll be next episode or when, but we are currently scheduling our very first interview. So I'm very excited about that.
Yes.
I will let everyone know, really. I always, with the interviews, I always find it's best to wait till it actually happens before you say anything.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's so many factors.
But
that's true.
Looks like we are setting up our very first interview. So hopefully that'll be sooner than later. Where are you now, Tara?
What? Where?
You were looking.
I was looking at
the... you're surprising me. You were like you were so you
you're
are
like,
really
your
full
lack of
dress.
Focus is really...
You're full dress.
Oh,
you're
I was
like,
thinking
full
about
makeup.
My...
You look amazing.
I was thinking about my
and then all
my
of a
bangle
sudden,
bracelets. Like everybody, if you hear this sound, it's I'm wearing a lot
of
bangle
of
bracelets. I was really excited to like wear my bangle bracelets. I was actually looking at the mail art hanging on our wall. I hadn't looked at it in a while. I was admiring it. I was like, oh, that looks
you
good.
You have a nice shirt on. You put full makeup on, jewelry, did your hair.
I
really,
nice
and you've been like
him.
Just totally like
just like focused,
just
all
laser sharp,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden we hit record, and you just went into outer space.
I have the attention
space.
Span of a cat right
but you
now.
You don't, you're not like that, so I
no,
don't know what's going on.
I was just looking at the wall. You would prefer to be, you know what?
I would prefer you to be focused on doing the podcast
okay.
that we're doing
well,
right now.
Maybe if you close the window, I won't gaze on them.
Why
window.
Do we sit this way?
I don't know. There's so many things for me to be distracted by in this world. I just can't help myself. I'm just interested in everything. I'm a new lease on life. Let's talk about The House of Lost Women.
Tara, let's
1982,
talk about The House of Lost Women.
Filmed in the gorgeous land of Malaga and Murcia. And Murcia, as you know, Mike, is near and dear to my heart because it has cheese.
You know it, Tara. What kind of cheese comes from there?
A lot of goat cheese. It's known for, I mean, I would say the cheese that everybody will know would be Murcia Alvino, which would be drunken goat cheese. It's that cheese that's cured with red Murcian wine. There's also...
Drunken goats, kind of like me and you last night.
We were definitely drunken goat. There's also naked goat, which we were also partially like.
Hey, fitting for
yeah,
Jess
so
Franco
again,
discussion.
Yeah, but the... There's a lovely, like, you know, aged raw milk goat cheese. They call it naked goat now, but I don't like it. It's Murcia Curado, the aged Murcian goat cheese. And then there's a fresco, too. But they're just wonderful, like, lovely. And it's on the Mediterranean coast. So, again, Jess Franco somehow having access to, like, historic, gorgeous, beautiful locations. So, Murcia, like, I know he's filmed in the Azores sometimes, which would be the other way. But this is the Mediterranean southerly part of Spain, like near Alicante with the beautiful, bright, crisp white wines.
Yeah.
Like, but piercing sunshine. But the whole point of this area and the feel and the thing that, well, before we watch this again, And we hadn't seen it in a while.
It had been a while, yeah.
And it had been longer than I thought. But the thing that sticks with you is that isolation.
Yes. It's setting that this this private island surrounded by the ocean, but in this way of isolating, melancholy,
yeah, this kind of
like depressive. It's not.
It's vestiges of a former era type of the Mediterranean, like the dilapidation, like the heyday has come, and the heyday has left. The parade has passed them by, and you're left with these vestiges of a different time, right?
Yes.
And it's not like the vestiges of like ancient Rome or like something of like a rich cultural heritage. It's more like an abandoned feeling.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so this movie is one of those Jess Franco's with a very, very small cast in a very small location, a house on a private island owned by the family.
La Casa de las Mujeres Perdidas. And again, like I can't, and it's being here in Southern California, being around a lot of Spanish being spoken, it is so charming to watch these films because they do have, and like Lena has that very, very Spanish accent, that lisp thing goes on. And it's just so damn charming. Like, and it's such a pleasure to like hear everybody's like just like thick accents of,
so great.
Of you know, Spain, Barcelona, like that area. It's awesome. And it's so, it enhances the strangeness and the specificity to like everything that goes on in these films.
And this one really does have a very strange, very depraved, very dark, downbeat atmosphere.
Yeah, and I said Candy, I'm sorry, I said Lena, but well, I mean Candy Coster.
She is in the Candy Coster wig in this movie and plays a nymphomaniac daughter to Antonio Mayans as the father, who is a ex-actor, or is he sort of making up what he's done? Is he telling tales?
Was he
exactly?
in the theater? Was he just a fan of the theater?
Yeah.
Like
we find this out as it goes, and then with the stepmother, and then a retarded daughter or sister. So this is our predominant cast until an outsider comes in to shake things up.
Yeah, this is not for the faint of heart. I mean, for a lot of reasons. Yes, one, when is Candy Coster not a nymphomaniac in a Jess Franco film?
I mean,
it's rare.
And in this one, she's trying to seduce her dad.
Everyone. Mother, father, sister. Like, I mean, she's not trying to seduce her sister, but things happen.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, actually they're more innocent. That part is actually far more innocent than I had remembered it being, so yay for that. But for that reason, yes, the incest, the nymphomania, the challenge sister who's really just like going full bore, nonverbal adult daughter sister. So those things might, you know, raise a few hackles, or, you know, you might be absolutely entertained by it because when do you see this? Who is willing to go there other than Jess Franco, right? Who's willing to
go
to this place? But then also, the other thing that I think is probably, for most people, for your average viewer, would be the most challenging is it's so languid. It's so slow. Like,
yeah, it's really slow.
Nothing happens.
Yeah.
Like, really.
You have to get into that.
You
Jess
gotta be
Franco
prepared.
Zone, and when
and
you're
it's a
in
joy.
It, yeah, when you're in it, it is great, and it's a zone that we can get into pretty quickly. But yeah, just if this, say, you watch Bloody Moon as your first Franco movie, and then you went right to this, it would be pretty jarring.
Bloody Moon has like charming dialogue and characters with nuance and a plot and things that happen. This is four people in a house, eventually five. We get one other character and really, really, you know, I made notes. I'm like, we're 25 minutes in and really what has happened? What have we learned? Nothing.
Well, we've learned that that the daughter is a nymphomaniac, we immediately see her masturbating and trying...
Estás locos.
Yeah, and trying to get her dad's attention. Then her stepmother naked painting her toenails while she's interrogating her dad, being like... why won't you have sex with me? Like, because you're my daughter. It's like, well, why does that matter? He's like, I don't know. And then the stepmom at one point says, like, you were kicked out of Argentina for molesting a young girl. And Lena Romay is like, oh, how romantic.
She was younger than you. And she was like, oh, tell me more.
Why did you molest me? And she's all like curled up and like with her ass in the air. So like that's what we learned.
With her tits off the entire time.
Completely insane family dynamic. And then with the other sister just yelling incoherently.
Well, as they say, stupidos. like what's wrong with her? Oh, she's stupid.
Yeah.
So, I mean... But in terms of, like, events...
Oh, no. Yeah, nothing that really ever happens.
I mean, ever. Yeah. It's truly just kind of people just bored. And Lena just... Oh, sorry, Candy...
Well, it's okay. You can say Lena. It's perfectly fine.
But she's just demonstrating... And then that's kind of the theme of this, is just people who have been plucked out of society and then have their own strange familial thing going on. And the things that they do when they're rocked by boredom and isolation, right?
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the extras with Stephen Thrower when he discusses kind of Lena and Jess's take on the incest and that being, and even, you know, the sexuality of somebody such as the stupid sister, let's say. And then they say that... They view their film as a fantasy, and they don't think anything should be off limits, and nothing should be taboo, especially not incest or something that is frowned upon society, because this is their place of fantasy. You know, this is their forum to think of all of those thoughts. And in the world of fantasy, why would you ever limit yourself? Because it's not real. Right.
Yeah. And obviously, this is something that would go through a lot of Jess's work.
And I love that. And so why? You know, I like that sentiment. I'm sorry, I'm struggling to like articulate it. I enjoy that sentiment because when you see people shrink back from subject matters or be offended by something, you know, I guess that is kind of like part of my take is like, it's not real. You know what
right,
I mean? Like this
right.
is a, this is a fantasy, and this is exploring things that exist in the world and exploring things that don't exist in the world, but you're showing what it would be like if it did, you know, like it's a fantasy. Like why is there no room for fantasy? That's why we create art, to create things that aren't what we're experiencing in real life, because we want something else. We need the difference.
And it can be used to talk about other things, which is, that's when art's the most powerful, using these things to then talk about other things. You know, so much of this movie is just that, you know, that, like you said, that life, when what happens when you're in this, and, you know, there's constantly these scenes of the airplane flying and Lena looking longing, what's out there? She's only ever been on this island. And basically the premise is that every once a week, a boat comes to bring supplies, which is how they're able to just live there. But we don't really ever learn how they were able to do that. But Lena's only ever lived there. And so just this thing of like, what is your life like when these are the only people you're around? Yeah. This is it. And she even
and
says in
trapped.
The beginning, like, she's been here long enough to have these things of beauty, the ocean, this thing become boring. I mean, did you write any of that beginning part down?
Yeah, I have. I think I took screenshot. I took pictures of the screen. I mean, because here's the thing. We have this unhinged sexual, like, essentially, no one is fully clothed. Well, except for the father. None of the women are fully clothed in really any portion. And it is that, like, Jess Franco world where you wouldn't even think to have a bra. But, like, if somebody's getting dressed.
Right, yeah.
They just stand up naked wearing some sort of, like, espadrilles or something. Some sort of shoe. And then they just put on a parka. Like, she puts on, like, a white down parka and just walks around. I mean, but that's something, like, Jess Franco does, right? Just, like, a coat, everything else open, right? Or a pair of, like, instead of pants, like, a woman will wear a pair of sheer tights as pants.
Totally.
Like, and that, again, happens also in...
Emmanuel.
But I love that element. And we've seen it so many times. It's just, like, you it's such a Jess Franco thing that you don't see anywhere else. But I love this outlandish element of just rampant sexuality, and then you get these moments of beauty and thoughtfulness, and the words that they speak, it's also profound, like romanticism of you know, being stuck in a place and you're watching the planes fly by and you wonder where everyone else is going, and you feel so isolated in the fact that everyone else gets to do something that you don't get to participate in, right? You're stuck. Like, who hasn't felt that way? Like, you're at work and everybody else gets to go have fun. Or, you know, like, there's a show happening. Everybody else is going to the Jesus Lizard, but you don't want to get sick, so you have to stay home. And you're just like, I wonder what they're doing at Jesus Lizard. I guess I'll go regrout the tub, you know? Like, things like, who hasn't had that moment? And there are times, like, even in Bahia Blanca, when Jess Franco really, really puts his finger on this pulse of humanity, of sadness, of bitterness, of estrangement, of love, of romance, you know, of passion. And it's really, the way it hits you, it almost seems like this, like, secret thing has been unlocked.
I agree.
You don't expect it there. Here, let me see if I can find the words.
I agree. I think House of Lost Woman has that. I would definitely relate it to Bahia Blanca in that isolation, in that melancholy. I've used the word melancholy a bunch, but it's true. This just has that melancholy feel. And Tara, did you find the words?
Well, here at the end, like, because she had talked about, you know, they saw that this small coastal town got an airport, but then in the end, she says that the airport closed. The planes that once gave me reason to dream are gone. I can leave whenever I want, but where to? And what will become of Pavlova? I know I shouldn't have these stupid fantasies. I know I'll never get off this island. And then the entire film ends.
Yeah.
But you hear this, you hear it, and you're like, wow. And she's saying it earnestly as a narrator, and you're seeing this, like, gorgeous seashore shot. But it's Candy Coster walking down a beach with an open kimono, no underwear, her
naked,
tits out.
Yeah, pushing her sister in a wheelchair
no bra.
Yeah, which is basically like the cover that you'll see.
You know,
in the
and
picture.
It's just, it, but it's this.
So it just has this absolute strange, dark, sexual, perverted quality. And that's the thing, is this movie is very, very perverted. I mean, the stepmother, when she's disciplining the sister, she's beating her with a riding crop, beating her pussy, and then making Lena lick her feet as a punishment, you know, like, so it's just like.
But then they even turn, because then the father's impotent, so then the stepmother and Lena turn to each other for physical comfort, and they bang. And then you have this scene where, like, afterward, Lena's looking out the window and she's like, and she just says, I have the impression that my life is completely useless, like those wildflowers that wither at the bottom of a valley.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what I mean? Like, you have these just like moment, and it's, but again, if you are annoyed, like, this is the type of thing to watch. You know?
Well,
you're feeling despair too, like, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I think it was the perfect movie for our moment in this week when you were very still. You were kind of the sickest you were.
I was feverish, and I just didn't feel like
we
I was getting
better.
We were
just in a very dark place and a very contemplative place. Mm-hmm. And so when we were looking, we had decided that we wanted to do another Jess Franco movie this week, and we were deciding which one to do. It just felt like feels like our mood right now.
And I felt grim at the time because, you know, it's frustrating when you are sick, and, you know, I tend to get sicker than a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating for me because it's hard to explain the feeling. Like, you know, when you've been sick for 3 weeks,
it's just maddening.
And you just aren't getting better. I'd been through antibiotics. I'd been through steroids. And then it seems like I'm getting better. And then all of a sudden I just get a fever and I want to pass out every time I stand up.
Yeah.
Anytime I try to walk around, I get winded and just want to pass out. It's like, you just get this feeling of despair. Like, what am I going to do? Am I going to go to the fucking hospital? You know what I mean? Like,
no,
now,
I know. Yeah.
You know, am I dying?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, is this it? You know what I mean? Like, when you get to that point where you're just like, I don't know what to fucking do
anymore.
And you're just miserable. And watching this was fantastic. It was because it really encapsulates just kind of misery, but it's not even people like optimistically making the most of it. They're acting out on their misery. But I will say, so again, more things like that I love about this and the craftsmanship of it, because I do think it's well crafted.
Absolutely.
Right?
So
I think some Jess Franco's more thought out than others. But having the father being like either a failed actor, because again, you can't get the truth out of like
He keeps saying different. Oh, I played this, or was it this, or maybe it was this.
His wife what it was, and she was like, "I wasn't there. I don't know." But then everybody's names, like the stepmother is Dulcinea, which is again pretty brilliant because it's Don Quixote's love, right, is Dulcinea. So then the father being the forgetful, like Don Quixote, the tragic idiot hero, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Totally works as a device to have the father being like the theater, whoop, Don Quixote, but he's not on a journey.
Right.
You know, he's staying in one place, right? So he, those two having that element, and then Paulova and Desdemona, like Desdemona from Othello, like the temptress, like, you know, the femme fatale, and then Paulova, like the ultimate, like, graceful ballerina,
which is so that ever. In that way it's used in ironically, correct? Yeah.
So again, like having those as devices,
yeah,
right, throughout the film, and I think it's got this just charm to it. For that, even doing societal and like cultural references, having him reading tabloids,
yeah,
like sitting at home with no access to society, just reading tabloids.
And then the one point where Lena is masturbating with a statue while Dallas is on, and clearly it's not like actually an episode of Dallas, but like a Spanish, like JR,
yes.
You know, like it, so it's like, and then there's commercials going through it, right?
Yeah,
and she's masturbating with like a statue.
She
in that.
Grabs like the it's like the a metal Venus de Milo,
yeah.
And then just starts like masturbating with it while watching Dallas. No, I mean, it's fantastic.
Well,
and then they always say that he says that he's going to go to Mendoza and take everybody to Mendoza.
Yeah.
We'll go to Mendoza. Like, so they're all going to Argentina because that's where he met her mother. And then he tells Lena that her mother was a whore who died of syphilis in Chile. Una puta.
So good. Well, then the thing that does happen in the movie is that someone else does come into their life, and it is a hunter played by Antonio Ribollo.
39 minutes in, by the way.
Another Jess Franco mainstay. I mean, this is really this and Emmanuel just have the Jess Franco mainstay actors in it, which again, unlike Bloody Moon.
Yes.
So this just has a lot of the people that you see throughout so much of this era. Obviously, Antonio Mines is in, you know, possibly the majority of Jess Franco movies. I mean, I'm not even 100% sure about that. But when he comes,
that feels right.
He, you know, this really then interrupts the entire, you know, ecosystem of the family. And he's seducing the stepmom. He's seducing Lena. And really cucking the husband, and even at one point he's basically watching him bang his wife after he banged the daughter, right? So he's just coming through, just banging. And
well,
then
he's got it. Yeah, I mean, you know, the ladies need some attention.
Yeah, and then eventually he's taking the wife away in this great moment where he basically exposes him to being like, you're a fraud. I knew about you. You're a fraud. I'm an investigative journalist. Like, you didn't do any of these things you said you did. And in fact, you didn't even rape that girl. And the wife's like, how humiliating. You didn't even rape. Like, that's some Jess Franco right there.
Like, final straw. I'm leaving.
And she's like, oh.
You didn't even rape that girl. We're not even here because you raped a girl?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, she's so
I'm
disappointed.
Not even here.
Yeah. So it just has that, again, just that. And just so matter-of-factly and so just in that strange, only Jess Franco movie type way.
You didn't even rape that girl and you've never been to Mendoza. Oh, my God. And then, like, a cap on it is that after this, after the wife leaves and the hunter man or the reporter leave on a boat, the only boat that comes once a week to bring them supplies, and then the father does this like amazing soliloquy on the seashore.
Yeah.
And just guts himself and we get imaginary applause. So again, the fool, like, oh, it's amazing. And then Lena's left alone with her sister and
it's just like, where would I go? What would I do?
He says, coast that rise, beaches that cry, they'll see you again. And then
we just know the two sisters are left and we know
the boredom, the despair, every
they could
bit
go,
of
but where would they go? And where would they could get on that boat?
And what would they do?
What would they do?
What skills do they have?
We're just left with that they are on this island for till the end of their days. Just supplies coming in, boats coming in, going away. No more airplanes. No more fantasy. Just strange sisters in a depraved, isolated house on their own island.
And I guess, and so like. I'm just reading my notes, and I just say that Dad guts himself on the sandy shore, and the boat leaves, and now what do we have? Desdemona and Pavlova. Perhaps she enjoys the solitude I detest, she says. And then they close the airport by the coast. They close down hope, essentially, their metaphor for her hope. And she says, perhaps I shouldn't have these stupid fantasies. I'll never get off this island. And so I was just thinking that this really is the capstone of despair. It's like an island, and they describe earlier how, like, how do you have your private island? This must have been worth a lot of money. Like, how did you afford it? And he's like, no, this island is worthless. There's no source of water. You can't drill on it. Like, this really is a worthless island. So they're left on a worthless island, and they just have their fantasy butting up against this just bleak reality. And, you know, I think that this film, like, highlights human limitation, right?
Yeah.
And that adult feeling when you understand what, as they tell kids, like, you can be anything you want to be. The sky's the limit. You can be anything you want to be. But maybe that only applies to if you're delusional. You know, like, truly, I guess you can if you choose to be truly delusional. But then, even like in this, your delusion has its limits, because at some point, you're going to knock your delusional head up against the hard stone facing of reality. And that's kind of what happens here, right?
It really does. This is really a great one. And I'm glad that we watched it when we watched it. I feel it was the right movie. Sometimes those movies hit at the right time. And this is one that hit at the right time. And like we said.
And I like, Mike, that you were while we were watching this, you're like, oh, How the World is Doing. That's a good ep title. How the World is Doing.
Exactly.
Kind of watching this, like, yeah. I mean, it is a great time to see this, because it's wild how many people we know that are like lost their job, and there's this like strangeness and uncertainty in the air.
Yeah.
And that is present in this, but kind of like this having your own reality existing in your within your small group that you interact with. And I kind of feel like that's like where we're all finding our strength right now.
Everyone's in a very strange place right now, and there's some sort of space that has been that we're in this very strange shifting space right now. Mm-hmm. I feel
a liminal period.
I think this movie really highlights it. And you know, Tara, I'm really glad that you suggested let's watch another Jess Franco from around this time. Just, you know, even if we don't take notes, just to add to the conversation. And while we didn't take notes for this, I'm excited to talk about this one as well, because it is there's something very different, but also very similar to House of Lost Women. I mean, down to that, there shares multiple cast members. Lena was busy filming another movie around this time, which is rare, but she filmed a few movies.
And it was, wasn't she like breaking up with her other lover?
No, that was in the
70s. Okay.
That was in the 70s. Yeah, because, you know, of course, the Stephen Thrower, great extra, you know, giving background in the movie. But This one is just there. Las this,
orgías inconfesables de Emmanuel.
Whereas the House of Lost Women has a very gray vibe, which is much like today right now. This has a very sunny vibe, but there is a strange darkness that goes through it. This one definitely has a little more, has some more laughs to it.
This has,
but there is
so this
a
is
darkness to
sweet
it.
And sunny, and Emmanuel the newlywed, the French newlywed. She, I love the lady who plays her. She's like a sweet, sunny blonde.
Played by Muriel Montassi. Do you want to pronounce her last name maybe? She's in a handful of Jess Franco movies. It's that first name right there in the back, Tara. Played by, it's,
oh, I don't see it. Where
it's
you
right
see it?
Here. Literally right there.
Literally right there?
Muriel... I just
oh, Montassé.
Montassé. There we go. We did.
Montassé.
And she is married to Antonio Mayans. And Antonio Ribello is the narrator who takes us through this movie in this just great, just misogynist.
Yeah,
like,
he's
just
like a... He's a...
Kind of a blowhard.
When people talk about an unreliable narrator, he's more of like a... Yeah, he's just an absolute narcissist, yeah, misogynist narrator.
And
you're seeing all of this like fun, romping sex and playfulness through his judgeful eye.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. And I love that element because otherwise, like, it added a dynamic that made this far more interesting, I think.
Oh, totally. Yeah, because it is sort of...
Could have just been like a... Because truly, again, like the other... The House of Lost Women, I'm watching and I'm like, why did he make this movie? Is it supposed to be titillating? Are you supposed to get sad? Because it's weird to want to get sad, but also watch people not
was
have
that
sex.
Psychosexual.
Be sexual.
Yeah,
you know?
And I think he's great at
it's
that.
It's like mixing sadness with perversion.
And he's so great at that.
And he's really good at it. But this is like more of a, like a playful thing. So then the darkness he mixes in is by putting in these like highly flawed characters who are wrong-minded. Highly flawed,
yeah,
characters.
A rape scene in the middle that is treated with very flippantly.
Just like,
sort of like, that happened, and we move right along.
Take a shower and move along.
Yeah.
I guess I better go get a tan now.
Yeah.
Just got raped. I guess I should just shake it off and get a tan.
Yeah, so it has this strangeness to it. I love
it. Really
the way...
made me excited, Mike. I don't know. I have already decided that this summer I'm going to wear a lot of like long strings of pearls. And I had
sounds
already
great.
Decided this. They're actually going to be shipping, arriving here. I have
oh,
a whole
look at
set.
That.
Possibly, I was hoping this weekend so like we could talk about this and I could wear my pearls. But they're not here yet. So, but seeing Emmanuel in her long string of pearls and all these things that I had already had, I was like, this is perfect. It was like a little sign from the universe that like, yep, this was the right thing to watch. This is right where you need to be. You made a great decision in getting this long string of pearls that you have decided you're going to wear all summer. And I'm so excited about it. I can't wait. Perfect accessory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect film.
Well, so this... simply is that Antonio Mayas and Emmanuel are on their honeymoon in this small town, filmed, you know, right around, there is actually, I think,
it's in Malaga and Murcia.
Some of the beach scenes are also, it's the same beach in House of Lost Women. He's used this area multiple times.
And probably he used, like, the budget that people had given him to film both. I mean, like, you know,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Jess Franco.
Yeah.
And this has the stepmother from the other, I mean, it's got the same cast.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for Lena.
Right, exactly. Yes, the incredible Carmen Carrion, she's so amazing. But basically, they're on this in this small, you know, seaside town on their honeymoon, and Antonio Ribello's character is narrating what they're doing. And Emmanuel, they've cheated on each other, but they're back together now for their honeymoon. And how's it gonna go? It opens in this great scene in this wax museum that was real. It's called the London Wax Museum. It's sadly closed, but it's amazing. And that's
great.
What put us in, immediately put us in this great mood, because the way they're impersonating the actors, like, hey, baby. Like,
oh, my God. I forgot
so,
about that.
That made us.
When
that,
he
we
was,
were
they
were
like the sexiest American actor ever. Humphrey Bogart.
We were immediately. This is when we were. This is. The sickness had more or less passed, but you were still
a
bit out of it.
Bitterness.
But we were very angry about possibly having a $10,000 bill. Which by the way we don't. So you know,
yes,
but we had this anger, and so we were like, I need to turn. I need to.
I need to not think about that.
And I need to go into another world. And this is what you picked to put on. And it was just like immediately this wax museum. We were just. We looked at each other. We had a big smile on our face. We're like, "Thank you. This is exactly what we need right now."
And he was like, she was like, "How would Humphrey say it?" And he's like, "Kiss me, baby."
It's so good.
Like, I want him doing impressions of American actors like all the time. It's so funny. It's so good.
So immediately put us in this great mood. They bang in the wax museum. And then we go to a night at a club with a sex show. I love this chick. She's great. Her sex show up until Emmanuel drunkenly gets on stage for some nice 69 action.
Yeah.
Her sex show basically consists of the most minimal amount of movement any human has ever done.
Mariah Carey level movement.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just her standing in a glittering pantsuit.
Yeah.
Smoking a cigarette with her legs kind of like, you know, shoulder width apart. Very stable. Triangular stance in her heels.
Yeah.
Just kind of mildly, languidly rocking back and forth a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, sometimes very little
bit. She picks her hands up a little, sometimes not, maybe to smoke. And she's kind of like makes sexy eyes at the audience and just sways. And then she kind of takes the top part of her jumpsuit down and she has Jess Franco tits like real far apart, opposite sides of the bot, you know, one on one rib cage, one on the other side.
Yeah.
And then later they spread them out as far as they can. Just spread them out. He's like, I don't want any breasts that are close together. I want to get them as far apart as possible. Anyway, so we have that. And then she kind of like, you know, kind of walks around real stably. Feet, never puts the feet together. Wide spread. And then kind of takes the jumpsuit off and then lays down on some sort of skin, an animal skin on the ground. And then no one can see. And they're all like, "We can't see." And it's like, yeah, I wouldn't imagine you could be able to see that star. And then invite somebody up there to fuck her.
Emmanuel drunkenly gets up there and they go to town on each
other. And she does. It was great.
69 style. And Antonio Mines gets a little bummed out. And then this is, you know.
But it's like he gets bummed out. But I will say, he didn't stop her.
Yeah.
And he didn't go up there. She was like, should I go? He wasn't like, no.
Yeah, he should have gotten up there.
She said, should I? And he didn't say anything.
On the action. Oh, yeah.
If you don't want her to go up and have sex on stage, then tell her to. Or say, if she's like, are you cool with this? Then he should be like, no.
If you're curious if there's any orgies in this movie, there are not.
The inconfessable orgy.
I mean, I guess the rape is two dudes raping her, but I wouldn't call that an orgy.
That's not necessarily an orgy.
Oh, but this reminded me, Tara, though, of the one laugh out loud funny scene in House of Lost Women is when Lena is pretending to smoke the cigarette out of her pussy.
Oh, that's right. She's
just like by herself.
She steals her dad's cigarettes, laughing
to herself.
Steals her dad's cigarettes, goes to her bed, lights a cigarette, and then starts putting it like down there, and she's like,
"Yeah, that's really funny."
Just like laughing that she's making her. Yeah, it's cute.
But so now we have the.
Some people actually can make it smoke, Mike.
Now we have the Antonio Rabello character narrating when the Carmen, Carrion, and Emmanuel are in their amazing looking place. Oh, the club also is amazing looking.
Dude, Jess Franco gets the most amazing places to film, much like. As soon as I said it, I knew if I wanted to say her name, it would come. It just fly out of my head like a winged bird. Oh, my God. I can't believe it. Stefania Stella.
Yeah.
I had to go through the whole motion, right? That's how the brain works. So Jess Franco, Stefania Stella somehow get like the most insane, scenic, beautiful, like striking architectural homes. Like, ever. How do they fucking do it? This place is so cool.
This place is really cool.
It's like that wild, like, mid-century futurism.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, my God. It's so cool.
So they're in there.
Oh, my God. So, I can't believe it.
So they're in there banging the two chicks. And the voiceover of Antonio Rebello is like, women with women. Ugh. Makes me sick. He's like, I guess I could try to get into it, but like, he was like,
I don't even want to take secondhand because I prefer to seduce a woman all by myself.
Yeah.
He doesn't want her to get warmed up by anybody else. And he was like, she was corrupted by a table of lesbians.
Yeah, it's so great.
And, like, and they call them lesbos.
Yeah, it's so
in
funny.
Spanish. Corrupted by a table of lesbos.
But then we have Antonia Mayans bangs the sex show chick. Again, Carmen, Carrion, and Emmanuel are banging. Everyone's banging separately in separate locations.
Yeah, I mean, every coupling possible, except for the two dudes, happens. And they just, but they do it individually. Well, so it's not really an orgy.
Yeah, but the best, per se. The best part is when Antonio Rebello finally does bang Emmanuel. It's after the rape again. She gets raped on a rock and a beach. Pretty brutal.
This is such a Jess Franco
And then
joke.
It just sort of goes away. She's naked sunbathing afterwards, and Antonio Rebello picks her up, and then
when he seduces her with a bottle of champagne.
When they're in the bed, he's like, "Now I'm going to show you how a real Spaniard, you know, makes love," and basically mounts her and pumps for like about 20 seconds.
And then he's done.
He's done. And in her face the whole time is like, "Oh, great."
But he genuflected like, oh. First. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
She's like, he's like, "Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah." He crosses himself. He's like, "Yeah. Yeah, you're going to get it." And and the best is her face the entire time. She's just like, "Oh, boy."
Oh,
like,
and she's like yeah. rolling her eyes yeah, yeah, yeah. and wearing her pearls. Oh, I can't wait. Let's do that. I'm going to roll. You can just roll my eyes.
I mean, we can recreate some of these things. Yeah. Worry not. But yeah, and so, and again, like everyone's sort of strangely jealous at times, but then not. Oh, yeah, when he walks in on them. Oh, yeah, like you're saying, when he walks in on the chicks banging and he's like, they're like, "You could join us if you want." He's like, "Nah. I'd rather woo you on my own." You
yeah,
know, like,
exactly.
So he's just
so
this
a
great...
real man woos you. Yeah. But it's a Jess Franco joke. You know what I mean? Like, it's Jess Franco making fun of himself.
And
in
I love that Stephen Thrower in the interview is like, the narrator in this case is not being the voice of Jess Franco, because
no.
if Jess had his way, it'd be chicks banging and only him, you know, watching and maybe
yeah forever he
it.
Would be
yeah.
we would only be
yes yeah, that, yeah yeah
that particular table. And I love how, and I like that they were like, "Oh, this old lesbo has
yeah.
corrupted the young woman." Oh,
it's so great.
I love it. And I love
the music's great too in this,
and I love
great.
That they have an older woman who does that. And she was like, "You've ever been with an older woman?"
Yeah.
And like, I like I'm just gonna keep cultivating that vibe of just like, the more you age, the more makeup you get to wear. The bigger your hair gets to be. The more jewelry
more
you get to wear. More, yeah, the more elaborate of an outfit you get to have.
I agree.
Until
I'm
just going
to
walk
it.
Up and be like, "Hello. Have you ever been with an older woman?"
That's right. I like it. I love the music in this. It has that great Spanish guitar. I love when they use the Spanish guitar in the movies.
Oh, yeah. That is something we were kind of talking about while we were being recorded. It's like, that is the thing. Like, Jess Franco puts these, like, elements of fantastic films together really well. Like, he gets amazing scenery, but he also gets great soundtracks. Like, his soundtracks for his, like, especially the soundtrack to The House of Lost Women
so
is
great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's really, like,
I'm pretty
subdued
sure
and isolated.
Same guy did
it's
Pablo
Villa.
Oh, for
I wrote Pablo Villa, but I don't think the name is Pablo. I think it's Pablo.
Oh, right. And then Daniel yeah. J. White also. Well, he would also reuse a lot of soundtracks
yeah.
stuff. And then also.
And I think
would also,
I did recognize some of the things in both of these.
Yeah. And he would also use different names for people a lot of times, too.
Yes.
So just to make it look like more people were doing stuff, he would actually like change people's names. And especially the actors had different names a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like
it's
Candy
so
Coster,
confusing.
Right. Yeah.
No, that is. And that is so confusing, too, because like the older lady in this with the weird, the cool Sylvester Stallone's
yeah,
mom's
Carmen,
headband.
Yeah.
Yeah. She has multiple names.
All,
and
they,
multiple
all do.
They all
do. Yeah.
It's
which is so
confusing.
Great.
But again, it's also like porn.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though this isn't porn.
Yeah. I mean, these were made to play in theaters that weren't porn theaters. That's, you know, they were made to be these erotic films.
But that's
right?
What I always wondered is, like, did he wish he could show penetration?
No,
did
he didn't,
because
he did do some in the 80s on, I think, just for the money. He did not want to do that.
Yeah.
He didn't like doing that. So I think he
but
did
it's such
like.
A, it's a, such a strange line to draw for yourself to be like, I want to simulate penetration, but I don't want to show penetration.
But I think that's what makes these, and we've talked about this, about
so
just
psychological
movies, and just so strange when we, you know, as much porn as we watch, it's like, so why would you watch something that you watch porn, but there's something that these movies have this just strange quality that we love, that when they are not penetrating, when they're not actually licking the pussy, when they're around it.
Yeah, like, they're just going all around it, but not it. And just like, Like,
I mean, I don't understand how the dudes don't get hard.
I don't understand how the guys don't get hard. Because they're not hard. And I don't. I know. They don't get
hard. Lena Rome, come on. I'm like.
And then they rub the bush, but they don't insert the finger.
Yeah, so I like that. And even sometimes, once in a while, they do. But it's just. I want to say in Shining Sex, and I want to say maybe.
Put a finger in?
Again, there's some. Sometimes you even see an asshole. But so I like.
It's usually hairy.
That strange. Restraint and oddness, just that's what makes these films, you know, yeah. And that's what I, when you get in that zone, it's sort of it's all you want to watch, because mm-hmm. you just can't, it's that otherworldly quality, really,
yeah.
You know, and that's what House of Lost Women has. And again, this Emmanuel, it's sunny and it's bright, but because of the narrator and then just because of some of the settings and the way everyone's portrayed, there is this darkness. This uneasiness. This has an uneasiness where House of Lost Women has this melancholy depravity.
Yes.
Emmanuel has an uneasiness.
Yes.
Because it's set against this bright background.
And you kind of worry in a way for Emmanuel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, she's so sweet.
Hot. She's so
And you're
hot.
Like, oh, she's so sweet. I hope it works out for her. And then it doesn't. And you're like, oh.
Or does
but
it kind of? I mean, well, it has a happy ending. And Antonio Mines are sort of together. And then Antonio Rebello's. Oh, because his, like, girlfriend is the sexual woman. And it ends with him being like, I'm just still with her. Like, you might wonder why. And it's like, she's just kind of a dog to me. But she's like, but then he's like, but she's lower than a dog. Because. A dog, you know.
A dog can have good breeding or something like that.
And he's just like, that's how it ends with him just being like, no lessons are learned.
No.
Everyone just sort of is like, no one has really evolved from where they're at.
You're back to the baseline. Yeah. And truly, like, it's really interesting to see how he can make a film that is just bounces from sex act to sex act to sex act, just constant.
Yeah.
Like, really, there's not, like, it's not even, like a 70s porn that we enjoy that'll have, like, a lot of, that'll have, like, exposition around.
Or even
moving up to it in scenes that aren't fucking.
Or even something like Night of Open Sex with these strange plot lines.
Yeah.
Or Cries of Pleasure is definitely more of this story that's contained within this.
But really, Emmanuel is just... bouncing from titillating scene to titillating scene to titillating scene.
Yeah, no, it's great. And these are a really good double feature.
And I love that. Oh, and sorry, I just...
No, go ahead.
Like, Jess Franco. Like, is it really a Jess Franco film if you don't get a tube top?
You're going to have some.
You're going to have a tube top.
Yeah, you're going to
have a tube top. And
there's going to be water.
There's going to be water, and the tube top is going to be worn over a pair of tights.
It sure is. Well... I think it's a great double feature for this era of Franco. And again, we wanted to do something different from last week's Bloody Moon episode, just to highlight what else we love about Jess Franco. Like you said, especially this era is kind of the era that we really honed in on with Franco. You know, there's a lot of people who really like the 60s stuff or the 70s,
and
early
great.
70s stuff. And we love that stuff too. And we love the mid period stuff, the stuff that was done in Germany, you know, with that great box set that we have with the 10 DVDs with all that stuff. Love all that stuff. But for us, this Golden Films era, Night of Open Sex, Cries of Pleasure, House of Lost Women, these really hit us in a way that we just, every time we come back to.
We're just, I'm always in awe of it. And I wanted to do another Jess Franco. I'm glad that we did, because... You know, I was still pretty damn sick last time, and I just didn't feel like I articulated my fascination and respect for Jess Franco enough. Because, I mean, who really ever did what he did? You
Nobody.
Know what I mean?
And as many films as he did, the year that he made both these movies, he made 13 movies that year.
And so many, like a wild output. And just each one having like a different little, you know, shift that gives it its own character.
Yeah.
But still just another, like if you had a marathon, like watching all these 13 movies together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There would be like this cohesive feel
totally.
To it, because there is this Jess Franco-ness to it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, but I guess I am... so impressed by what he did. I'm saddened that it's a world where that's not going to happen again.
Oh, definitely.
And that long form film is not aspirational, and that now it's just going to be kind of like short 5-minute videos or,
I mean, nothing like this could ever happen.
Somebody again. Driven to do some just like constant documentary or something nothing, like that. And you're just like, this is.
There can never be another Jess Franco. There can never be movies like this again.
Yeah.
The way Jess approached the movies, the people he brought together with him to make these movies. I mean, I think in a way,
the fanaticism
in a
for
way,
making
like
film.
Wave Productions is somewhat in that way with this group of people making these movies. Like, you know, they made more like, you know, like hundreds of movies a year or whatever, but like,
but it's their life.
Yeah, exactly. Know? Exactly. You know, so I would say that would almost be it, but even that like can't be recreated anymore, you know? And so, these are the things that to us are the underground and the underground of film and what we love and what constantly inspire us here.
And Jess is like, no, I want to titillate. I don't want to do porn. I want to do a film, but I don't want it to be, I'm not trying to like, you know, do another Spider-Man. I want nudity and I want titillation. I want romance. I want sadness. I want brutalism.
Yeah.
I want violence.
And each movie's different from each movie. And this is what this movie is. And this next movie is this. And this next movie is that. And this next movie is that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of ways it's the way we approach doing noise tapes. You know, this one's this. This one's that.
And it does feel like
Scientific Surprise Attack is this. Yellow Gas Flames is this, et cetera, et cetera.
And it feels like he created them based on like the mood that he wanted.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
No, exactly.
He's like, I want to think about this feeling and this mood, and I'm going to make a film just around it. And it doesn't need to just hit it right on the head.
Yeah.
You know?
When we do Scientific Surprise, this is the mood we're in. Yellow Gas Flames, this is the mood we're in.
Yeah.
Other projects, you know,
based on
human
emotion.
This is the mood we're in.
Yeah.
And you know, Failing Lights is, you know, very different, et cetera. So,
I'd say I'm in a more Failing Lights mood lately.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Actually, some of the stuff we're going to be working on is sort of in that realm-ish in the next week or so. But the way he approaches these is something that I can really relate to, the way approaching individual projects and how there's this through line, but it doesn't mean that there is the sameness.
Yeah.
And even though there's a feeling of... there's a feeling that you've been here before, but it's just there's that twist, there's that feeling of familiarity but something different about it because it's a different mood.
It's like in a dream where you're like, I was at home but it wasn't my home.
Exactly.
You know, it's
so
that.
Yeah, these are great. I mean, look, you get in a Jess Franco zone, it's hard to get out of that zone. Like we said, not 100% sure what will be next week. It possibly will be an interview or it'll possibly be something else. Of course, stay tuned to the you know, the IG where we post the stuff, where we let you know what we're doing to prepare for the episodes.
Yeah.
And oh yeah. And I, hopefully by the time this comes out, it's been fixed. But if you're new to this, for whatever reason, the early episodes keep getting archived on the iTunes feed, on the Apple feed.
Yeah. We can't figure it out.
They're on, it's on Spotify. It's on the website. It's on all the other platforms, but we can't figure it out. We've written them. We're having Gray look into it. So they still do exist. We're not erasing them. Like I said, you could listen to them on just the Underground Espionage website. There's other places to listen to them. They're not gone, but we're trying to figure out why that keeps happening.
Mm-hmm.
So as of recording right now, episode 1 and 2 aren't up on the Apple feed. Hopefully you'll have that figured out. But yeah, thanks for all the support and everyone's been writing. It's been really cool. I've been loving hearing from everybody and hearing everyone excited, kind of hearing people writing different, you know, porn that they've been getting that they're excited for us to do an episode on.
That's nice.
You know, we'll obviously we're always going to do great porn stuff. I'd like to talk a lot more about Jess Franco and so much more. Again, brought up Wave. We haven't done a Wave episode, and we've got a couple Wave titles we haven't watched yet. So then maybe that'll be sooner than later. Well, thank you so much, Tara. You really came through. You had the attention span of a puppy when we hit play.
But
I think
I
think you really
I
came
focused.
Through.
Yeah. I have a rash now, so we should go.
Fantastic. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for the support. We will talk to you next week.